Hi, this is Alan Chartok pleased to be in the Congressional Corner with David Hawkins, one of the smartest guys about Congress, maybe the smartest of all. I guess I want to ask you about a couple of questions. Biden, you know, what's going on there?
Right. So any day now, and who knows, between the time that we are talking and the time that listeners listen, he could announce. The word is that he is, you know, 95% ready to go. What is in that other 5% of indecision? We're not exactly sure, except we think that he wants to, if he runs, he wants to be pretty confident he's going to win. Third time is, you know, I said the last time I was on that Democrats don't give too many folks more than one shot at this. This would be Biden's third shot at this. I think he would automatically be in the top tier. Obviously, the most experienced person in the field. You know, he's sort of the antithesis of, he's everything that Donald Trump is not. I think that he would be formidable. There was some talk in recent days that he was going to try and do something outside the box, like announce his running mate when he announced his candidacy, and that might be Stacey Abrams, the Georgia legislator who came so close to winning the governorship last fall.
Who is African American, and that's very important.
Who would be the first African American female governor in the country, right?
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the Supreme Court. I know you know a lot about it. Redistricting, gerrymandering has always been a big issue. It's coming before the court as we speak.
Right.
And there is a question as to whether or not this conservative Republican majority appointed by Republicans on the court has any mind not to let the Republican state legislators do as they like.
Well, and the Democratic state legislators, to be fair. This is a bipartisan move. And yes, you say gerrymandering's been on the agenda of the court for a long time. Yes. But up until now, it's always been about racial gerrymandering, and the court has said time and time again that you cannot gerrymander districts to disenfranchise people of color.
That's
but
right.
They've never answered the question: can you be too partisan in your gerrymandering? Can you gerrymander with so much overt partisan intent that it becomes unconstitutional, that it disenfranchises other people? That's the case before the court this week. It's actually two cases. One is a Republican map in North Carolina that,
yep,
North Carolina, 50-50 purple state, has drawn a map where it's 10-3 Republicans, 3 Democrats. They're also listening to a challenge to the congressional district map in Maryland, which is. It's a little bit more purple than people give it credit for. Statewide, the vote is usually about 60-40 for the Democrats, but the Democratic legislature has drawn a map that is 7 Democrats to just 1 Republican. So this is a bipartisan game, or both parties play it. The question for the court is, if it's unconstitutional, how do we decide? What's the formula? How are we as judges supposed to decide this much is too much? Or do we just say, the drawing of political maps is inherently political. It's all about politics, and just let politics play itself out.
And that goes a long way back. I remember my constitutional law class back in the 60s when they taught us that Felix Frankfurter had said, stay out of the political thicket. Let them figure this out.
Right.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about some of the interesting people that you have been paying attention to for years. Mitch McConnell. Now, he really turns out to be a Trump backer to the point where he's willing to go against the sentiment in his entire House when it comes to, for example, releasing the Mueller report.
Yes, that was interesting to me. I guess I'm wondering whether that was a temporary thing. I don't know. I think Mitch McConnell generally does not do what you described. Generally, Mitch McConnell's modus operandi is he's willing to take the bullet for his caucus, for the fellow Senate Republicans,
sure,
but he only gets out front and does stuff that he knows they want him to do. So holding the Merrick Garland, holding the Scalia vacancy open for a year, he didn't just unilaterally do that. He did that because virtually all of his Republicans were with him, not bringing up this bill we talked about a couple of visits ago, H.R. 1, because he's doing that not because it's his own ideology, although it is, but because he's checked with his fellow Republicans and they don't want it to see the light of day. So this is his usual his usual thing is to get out front and basically, you know, take the bullet for the colleagues, but not without making sure that that's what they want.
So now we have the phenomena of AOC, Ms. Cortez, who took the country by storm, very popular tweets, and everybody jumps up high when she does, and she dances in front of her office, and people like that too. But she was not representative of the class of new Democrats who took the House of Representatives, right?
She's more that's true in a sense that the key to victory for the Democrats taking back the House was finding people who could take seats away from the Republicans in districts that went for Donald Trump, or at least were, quite full toss-up districts. Of course, Ms. Ocasio-Cortez, it had nothing to do with that. She got to Congress by running to the left of a very powerful incumbent House member. And, she incredibly, she beat the guy by 4,000 votes and is now on, has leveraged that 4,000-vote win into national celebrity. She's clearly the most celebrated, highest-profile first-term House member in, certainly modern times, certainly in the 30 years I've been there.
So how's she getting along with Nancy Pelosi?
No, it's a little bit mixed. I think Mrs. Pelosi wants to harness her energy, but I think Ms. Pelosi would just, Mrs. Pelosi's pretty old school and believes that there should be a certain amount of dues paying and deference to the leadership, and that is not the Ocasio-Cortez brand.
Democrats have a habit of forming a circular firing squad and killing each other. Is that happening here?
It potentially could. I think if the Democrats decide that they want to talk about, the Green New Deal and packing the Supreme Court and doing away with the Electoral College and they don't start talking about health care and job creation and the minimum wage, they're going to be in trouble. And because, if you want to think really tactically about winning in 2020, their task is to, at a minimum, to reverse the four states that used to be is to put back in the blue wall the four states that everybody thought was in the blue wall for Hillary Clinton that went for Trump instead. And the votes that made Trump president in those four states are not people who care about, the Green New Deal.
Have you been watching those four states? And David, can you give us a unjaundiced eye as to whether or not they can be put back in the wall?
Yeah, they can. The president's is what they say in polling underwater in all four places. So his disapproval is significantly higher than his approval in all four places.
Now I take it that was not that was true when Trump was facing Hillary, and yet somehow he took them. So can we believe the polls?
Right. So a thousand more polls are going to be made in the next 22 months.
It's always wonderful to hear from our pal David Hawkins, who's editor-in-chief of The Firewall, a nonprofit news site focused on American democracy. David, give us the directions to how to get it.
Right, thefirewall.us. If you go to thefirewall.us, get on our mailing list, and we will start sending you most days of the week a newsletter of hot stories in the world of democracy reform, and then the site will launch later in the spring, and but no reason you shouldn't get on the mailing list now, thefirewall.us.
David Hawkins, I can't tell you how much we appreciate your being here with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Alan.